Hey, welcome to That's Not Proper, and I'm your host, Corey Ascension. After seeing through personal experiences as a caregiver for an elderly loved one, my guest saw that there was a huge need for resources, tools, and education for caregivers. Seeking to fill this gap, Liz Craven and her husband created Elder Care Guide to assist caregivers in what is a confusing and frustrating maze. That guide, alongside her website and podcast, Sage Aging, she has dedicated herself to making this caregiving journey a bit more manageable. I asked Liz to come on today because I firmly believe and agree there is a need for this gap to be filled, and sooner rather than later. Thank you so much, Liz, for being here with me today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
You know, I first found out about you. I can't remember if you had messaged me or if we had found each other somewhere, but normally this isn't a topic I would discuss on this podcast. However, considering a few things, one, it's more common for women to be the caregivers. And so I'm big on supporting women. And I think a lot of times as women, we don't realize that we need to plan ahead for our parents or loved ones as far as what's going to be entailed in their caregiving journey. And quite honestly, for myself, I didn't realize that until I started caring for someone else's loved one. And So now it makes me reflect on my parents, who are not at the point in their life where they need care. But it makes me realize, oh, we need to be prepared for this, because I'm starting to see too many people not realize it, and then they fall into crisis mode. Right now, we've got to find out. And so the reason why I loved what you do and why I really wanted to have you on here was because I think it's important to start this many years before we realize. Because once you're in the middle of that crisis, and once you realize, as you have realized, there is not a lot of access to resources that make sense. It's important that we kind of have our game somewhat together.
Yes, that is so true.
Yeah. And so what I think where I want to start off with first is, when do you suggest we truly begin?
You know, that's a great question. And I think that it really depends on each family. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a, for instance, my family. My children are 26 and 28. We have already had discussions. We are already planning for the future. It's so important to do that, because if you have no plan, if you have no map, if you have no itinerary, how do you know where you're going?
Right.
And how can you possibly be prepared for the unexpected? And that's a really big thing. We have to be prepared for the unexpected, because we don't know what we have in front of us several years down the road. Mm-hmm. We don't know what health issues we might face. We don't know what's going to be the situation in our country.
Right.
You know, what type of access will be available to us? We can't rely on programs and other things that have traditionally taken care of us into the future without having our plan B in place. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we decided that being proactive and making sure that we knew exactly how our care would be provided, who would provide it, how we would save and prepare for that, was a good idea to do that now rather than wait and wonder what if later. We're not going to rely on everything else. We're going to prepare in advance so that if some of these other things go away, will be okay. So I would say there is never a time too early to start these discussions within your family. It really is a family discussion, and it's a very uncomfortable discussion, mm-hmm. because who wants to start thinking about the ending years of their life? You know, we all want to believe that we're in our prime, and, you know, I'm 53, but my mind wants to think I'm 28. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to start thinking in those terms. But having been a caregiver, I've seen what happens. Mm-hmm. I've had both scenarios where plans were made and everything was in place. That was a much easier caregiving scenario than the situation where things were not planned in advance. Mm-hmm. That was stressful, and brought a lot of emotions to the surface that maybe didn't need to be there because of the stress, and to feel helpless as it relates to things that should have been in place before that weren't, and there's nothing you can do about it now. Mm-hmm. You know, so it kind of, it's a very different dynamic going through these years and through these illnesses and situations, sometimes just, you know, natural aging, not needing care for an illness or something, but just daily activities of living. And when you start to slow down, someone needs to drive you places. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with that from the perspective of someone who prepared was far easier than dealing with that from the other perspective.
Right. There's so many different topics I'd love to cover in this. I know we're not going to hit them
we
all.
We could talk for hours.
Seriously, you could talk for hours on this. And again, I feel like I probably would have never considered it until I was put into the position of caring for somebody. And again, like I said, this, I'm caring for somebody else's loved one. And mm-hmm. what I'm seeing is happening, or because I'm a live-in caregiver, I kind of get a lot of the information first before I have to pass it on to the family. And so it's caused me to think about my parents. And even though they're not there yet, I know that it's coming. And it wasn't a conversation we've ever had. You know, I'll hear things like, oh, when we die, this is what you're going to get, or something like that. Those aren't even conversations I care about. I want to know, how am I going to be able to care for you? My parents are divorced. And so it's not like I can go bring mom in, bring dad in, and we'll care for them at our home, or me go to their home. They live in two different homes, at opposite ends of the state, kind of a thing. And so I've got to figure those things out too. So it wasn't until recently I talked to my father. It was probably within the last year. And I said, Dad, do you have like a POA or anything like that? Nothing. And I don't know anything about what, and at the time I didn't know anything about, you know, do you have a trust? Do you have a living will? I didn't know. I wouldn't even have known where to begin to search for those things in his home. And so my first question is, if you could give one thing for someone who is, and again, I feel like we need to go back to in their 20s with parents. I agree. It should be, you know, sure, after you're 18, because then you can make some somewhat, you know, legal decisions. But what's the one thing or the one place they should begin as far as establishing care with things with regards to like a living will, a trust, a POA? What's the one thing you would tell them? Begin here.
The very first thing that has to happen is a conversation with the family.
Okay.
So I'm talking all of the siblings, mom and dad, and anybody else who, you know, if mom and dad are divorced, is there a significant other in the picture? Anybody who would be right there with you in your current living situation, everybody needs to be at the table.
Okay.
Anyone who would have any part of the caregiving process needs to be sitting at the table. The first thing we need to do is establish, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this conversation is with mom and dad. Hey, you know, we really want to make sure that you have the best life possible. And so together as a family, we're going to approach planning for future years, not only for you, but for us too. And by the way, when somebody turns 18 years old, that's when they should begin this process for themselves. Mm. See an attorney and have your documents put in place. If something happens to you tomorrow and you are incapacitated somehow, a car accident or something like that, a health incident, if you don't have the proper paperwork in place, you could face some challenges. It would be easier for you and for your family to have documents in place. So that happens when you turn 18. Sending your kid to college, make sure that their paperwork is in place so that anything that happens, people know how to proceed. So back to the family conversation. The first question is, what do you want?
Okay.
Once we get through that, and that applies to what type of living situation might you want? That applies to what type of care do you want to receive? Meaning, would you be interested in going to an assisted living at whatever point that would be necessary? Do you want to stay in your home as long as possible? When we get closer to the end of life, are you interested in nursing home care or would you prefer hospice care in the home? You know, these types of, what would be your ideal for your own lifespan? So when I'm here, this is how I want to live my life. I want to go out and engage in activities and be social and join senior groups or go to my church groups. You know, here's how I want to live now while I have full capacity. Mm. As I start to become challenged, maybe, you know, some people are going to choose assisted living. I want to go there. My father-in-law did and loved it. So many activities, lots of great fun things to do. But there are others like my mom, she wanted to stay in her home. And so that means possibly bringing some paid care into the home, mm-hmm. right? So once you get beyond that stage and maybe there is an illness or when they get to end of life, what kind of care do you want to receive at that point? This is kind of like a wish list. This is what my perfect trajectory would be. Mm-hmm. So once you know what they want, the next question is, what do you have?
Right.
This is a very uncomfortable mm-hmm. scenario. This is a very uncomfortable conversation for most people because now you're starting to talk about assets and they're having to open the door for you to let you in. Mm-hmm. That's really hard. That part of the conversation, you might brush over the surface initially, but get them to start thinking and get them to go and see their attorney. Everyone should see an elder law attorney to put their estate plan in place. That should happen early on. If you're in your 30s and 40s and you haven't done that, you need to make an appointment and do that because that's everything from financial, medical. It's kind of, again, your wish list. This is how I want things to proceed in my life. And if something happens to me, this is the person I want to make decisions. This is the person I want to be the executor of my estate. All of those big decisions that have to be made, you want to make those before you need to make them. And so that is a conversation they could carry through with their legal professional. And then later on, we start to get deeper into those conversations as you continue to have them, because the first conversation, you're not going to get there. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable and you're going to have to ease into it and start to change the dynamic of the relationship gradually so that they don't feel like you're trying to take over their life.
Right.
You never want that. You never want them to feel like they are less than and that they are not capable. This is a partnership and it's you holding hands with your loved one to say, let's walk through this together and make sure that for both of us, this is the best experience possible and that you have the best life ever. So after we discover what they have, what do we need? Mm-hmm. Right? So here's what you have. If that doesn't match what you want for your life, then we have to figure out how to fill that gap, or we have to figure out how to maybe choose a different path. Mm-hmm. So those are all conversations that have to happen early so that it might be that you look at the finances and you kind of project what the cost is going to be for the type of care they want, and decide amongst yourselves as a family, well, when we get to that point, we can chip in each sibling a certain amount, or we can choose a different type of care. Or maybe mom or dad comes to live with one sibling and you rotate care and have caregivers come in sometimes. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different scenarios that can happen. But without those conversations, then when something happens, you're left there to go, oh my gosh, what do we do now?
Right.
And it's very stressful, and it doesn't have to be.
The one thing you had mentioned was, going back a little bit, just real quick, you had mentioned seeing an attorney around the age of, for your 18-year-old, or, you know, taking the 18-year-old to see an attorney. What type mm-hmm. of attorney would they see? It's probably not going to be an elder care attorney. What type of an attorney would an 18-year-old go see?
No, they can see pretty much any attorney. I mean, if you have a legal professional that you use, a general practice mm-hmm. attorney, they can put these types of documents together. Mm-hmm. Having said that, you can also go see an elder law attorney and they can do those documents for you no matter what age you are. Okay. Most of them work with a wide range of people. So if you're interested in having somebody that you work with for a long time period, or if you yourself have an attorney that you're using for your estate plan and documents, I would just say go to that trusted professional, someone you have a relationship with already, and start there. Otherwise, any general practice attorney is going to be able to put together those documents for you.
Great. Now, one thing you mentioned a little bit was about the changes that occur.
Yep.
And while I really want to make sure we recognize the necessity of taking care of these, the legal end, one thing mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people understand is that being a caregiver is not as easy as it seems. It's not just mom or dad comes to live with me and we have a fun time. And as mom gets older, I get to cook for her. It is not that. And it can get pretty ugly and mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, gross. You know, there's a lot that occurs and we aren't always prepared for that, I don't believe. I've had to do some things here that I don't mind doing. But part of the reason why I'm a caregiver here is because the children aren't able to do those things, the person that I
right.
take care of. And so I think it's important that we talk a little bit about caregivers and reality. And so one of those things is, let's be realistic about what could possibly occur. And so let's say mom and dad say, I want to stay home until end of life. And lots of things could change that as far as like medical needs. And there's a lot that can be done with regards to hospice, but not everything. The other thing that I think is so important is a lot of people going into this situation, which honestly will probably be my children, is we don't have the funds and the resources available to be put into a home or assisted living. And that means that my children may have to come up with the funds, which honestly, to even say that now when I'm so young is terrifying for me. I would hate for that, but it's realistic. And
right.
So resources available, financial resources available, where could we lead people to? I don't know if that's governed by state or federal. I'm not 100% certain about that. But the other big thing I think is important to discuss, I would like for you to discuss, is the need for caregivers to realize that they kind of have to be number one in the sense of care of themselves. And there is, and you can talk a little bit about the high rate of issues with health and whatnot with regards to caregivers.
Let's tackle the money part first.
Mm-hmm.
Finding resources is difficult at best, mm-hmm. even for someone who knows where to look for them. Having said that, there are so many of them out there. Now, financial resources, it's a combination, and each state is going to look a little bit different.
Okay.
The first place that I would begin is with your local area agency on aging, and I will send you a link that you can include in show notes.
Okay.
For the elder care locator, you simply put your zip code in there and you're going to find your local area agency on aging. You'll call them and they will connect you to whatever services are available. I often hear the question, can I get paid to be a caregiver at home for my loved one?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is sometimes. Mm-hmm. That typically, it again, depends on your state and the funding that's in place. That typically happens through Medicaid. So if you have Medicaid, the answer is typically going to be yes to some degree, but certainly not a full-time salary.
Mm-hmm.
If you have veterans benefits, that's probably a best case scenario because of aid in attendance. And so they have access to more benefits than the average person. So it really just depends. There are ways to find out. And the best way is to just call your area agency on aging. They will connect you to any social programs that are available. Many of them offer things like respite. Mm. So if you're caring for someone at home and you need time to go to the grocery store or just time to go have a cup of coffee with a friend,
mm-hmm.
that's available in many instances, but again, it depends on your own area. So that would be the first place that I would start. The other place to check would be your local chamber of commerce to find out what organizations are in your community. For example, Meals on Wheels. We have a place here called Volunteers in Service to the Elderly. They provide transportation. Mm. They provide delivered meals several times a week. They have a food pantry people can go to. They even deliver birthday cakes for all of their clients annually. And so some of these things are not the money, but if you don't have to spend your money on some of the things that you can take advantage of local resources for, then that frees up a little bit of money for you to spend on the things that are necessary. And it puts you in a situation where you don't have to choose between food and medicine, because that is a very common scenario, right? People choosing between, I'm going to take my medication or I'm going to eat. And right now, especially with COVID, those opportunities are really out there and fairly abundant. So you should never have to go hungry. And it's just a matter of finding those services. The Area Agency on Aging will also connect you to what's local to you. But sometimes they don't know about the hyper local things that are right in your city. And so that's important to check into those and ask other people. And once you find a provider or a nonprofit that's providing one service, ask them who the community partners are that they collaborate with, and you'll be led to other things. So it kind of starts that snowball rolling, and you can find resources to assist you. Usually, you'll find if you have a need for, say, a piece of equipment or a bed or a small repair in your home, those are usually things you're going to be able to find. You might just have to dig a little bit.
Right.
So now let's talk about self-care, because gosh, I think that's probably the single most important thing that we'll talk about today. Mm. Because the first thing to understand is self-care is not selfish.
Right.
Amen. We're going to repeat that because that is so important. Mm-hmm. Self-care is not selfish.
Yes.
Because let's think about this. You have to be at your best in order to provide the best care possible to your loved one. If you are not at your best and you become ill, you can't give care anymore. You get run down, you start to crumble under the weight of depression. Who cares for your loved one?
Right.
Yeah, that is so serious. And it is probably the most serious issue that there is for caregivers, because they just don't know how to make the time in the day for themselves.
Right.
So even if it's 5 minutes, and somebody that I met, Suzanne White, I met her on Instagram, and she's Caregiver Warrior. And she came and did an interview with me. I wanted to talk to her about her caregiving journey because she has done that. And she shared a little acronym with me that I just love. And I don't know where she originally got it, but it's called HALT, H-A-L-T. So when you're feeling overwhelmed, when you just feel like you can't take the next step, you're going to stop. You're going to halt. If you are hungry, eat something. If you are anxious, find a positive way to cope with whatever is causing your anxiety. If you are lonely, call a friend. And if you're tired, sit down and rest for a few minutes. Mm. It's kind of an emotional self-check-in. When you're feeling overwhelmed, check in with yourself. I don't care if you have to go to the bathroom and lock the door for 5 minutes. Take that 5 minutes and allow that time to be just for you. Close your eyes, go to a different place, check in, make sure that your own personal needs are being met, meet them the best way you can, then take a deep breath and go back in.
I love that. But actually,
yes, it's so important.
It's funny, I almost got tears in my eyes. Well, it's the idea. One big thing that I occasionally struggle with as a caregiver is loneliness. It's a very real thing. And I have 7 children and a house full. But there is a sense of loneliness because as I have an amazing support system, I know a lot of caregivers that do not. And so I have the ability to take breaks and things. It doesn't change the loneliness because this is a 24/7 thing. And so when you have others there that support you, but maybe don't necessarily understand, because it's hard to understand if you haven't done it, it can become a very lonely thing, despite the fact you're surrounded by many. And so I start to get teary because I'm like, yes, these are real things. And you don't realize it till you're in the midst of it. And I'm a little bit of a control freak, too. So I also, part of this is my fault. And so I'd love to tell caregivers that are control freaks like myself, you have to let things go, delegate if you have the ability to delegate. And there, it's just menial things sometimes. Like, I know the way he likes his bowl on his tray. And so I won't let anybody else make him breakfast because of that. You know, if it comes to that, I know the best spot to put the diaper pad and socks and clothes and towel in the bathroom. So I don't let anybody else do that. And those sound like little things, but they add up. And so they do. And so I'm learning that I need to, if I have somebody else that can help me, or it's not that big a deal if, you know, the diaper and pads to the left instead of to the right. And it's really important. That's part of that halt thing. I love that. I absolutely love the halt thing.
Thank you. Me too. That was probably the most meaningful moment of that interview for me, because it really spoke to me from the perspective of a caregiver. And we have to remember to do that. We have to remember to take care of ourselves, take that a step further and make it a priority at least once a month to schedule an hour that you go out of the home, away from every caregiving responsibility, go read a book somewhere in the park, or go have coffee or lunch with a friend. Do something that is for you and you only. That is your selfish hour. If you can find support to do that once a week, that's even better.
Right.
Some caregivers can't do that. That would be too often. But, you know, there are so many people who say, how many times have you heard this? If there's anything that I can ever do to help you, let me know. You hear that all the time, right?
Right.
And the other thing on the other side of it, you hear the caregivers say, why does everybody always offer help and nobody steps up to the plate to offer? Well, I think I know why, because as the person who's offering, this is the polite thing to say, maybe they genuinely want to help. And so they say to you, the only thing they know to say, if I can ever do anything to help you, let me know. So the caregiver is standing here going, I don't even know which way is up. I have no idea what you can do to help me right now.
Right, exactly.
And so no answer comes back. And this person trying to be nice and probably really does want to be helpful has no idea what to do to help them, can see they're overwhelmed and thinks, I should just stay out of their way and not cause them any more stress. So the solution for that, you're going to make a list, a running list of things, little things. You know, maybe it's doing a grocery run. Maybe it's going and gassing up your car for you and vacuuming it out so that you have a nice clean car to drive around in. Maybe it's coming over for 30 minutes and painting grandma's fingernails, right? Maybe it's coming over and doing a craft activity so that you have 30 minutes to go take a luxurious bubble bath. Whatever those things are, make a list of those. And every single time somebody says to you, how can I help you? Is there anything I can do? Just give me a call. You're going to email that list and they're going to pick off that list what they think they can do for you and what they're comfortable doing for you. And that's going to be a nice little segue into receiving some extra help because they don't know what to do for you. That's why they ask.
Right.
But that question is overwhelming to a caregiver. You have no idea how to respond in a moment.
Right.
So if you keep a running list, that really helps. I've done that. It works. People are glad to help. Mm. And those little things that you mentioned, they really do make a difference. If someone can do all the chopping of the veggies for me, yeah. Oh my gosh, then you can just dump and go.
Well, I would even go further with that. If it's someone that is asking that question, you know, what can I do for you? I actually was told this by someone who was talking about dealing with the death of a loved one, and people will say, what can I do for you? And what she said was actually more helpful was to just do it. So dropping a coffee and a donut on the doorstep. I don't know. Majority of caregivers I know are definitely inhaling the coffee. So a nice coffee that's their favorite on the doorstep. Telling them, hey, I'll be over on whichever day you want. Because keep in mind, people that are caregivers, drop-bys are not always fun. It sounds like, oh, I'm going to give her some reprieve and drop by. No, no, no. It could have been the worst day on the planet, and a drop by is not always a good thing. Have a conversation about, you know, what's a good day, what's a good time, and don't overstay your welcome. But dropping a meal off or having groceries sent to the house, have, you know, those kinds of things, just don't ask, just do it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's because those tiny little things, I love that you said, by the way, chopping the vegetables, because it's one of the things I hate doing for prepping for dinner. In fact, I did it yesterday. I needed some stuff that was cut up, and I would told my kids, I'm like, that's it today. I'm actually going to have you help me with some stuff today. I need someone to go do this. And they did it. And it was a relief for me, but I'm not very good about asking. And even when someone asks me, I don't want to burden somebody else with what I feel is my burden. And so I'm notorious for not, I'm fine, I've got it, and sure, I'll get it done, but I might have lost all my hair by the end of the day. Who even knows?
I think that most caregivers are that way. I know I was. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that we want to play the martyr. I don't think that's it.
Right.
I just think that, like you said, we don't want to put anybody else out. Like, you know, my life is already stressful.
Right.
I'm already doing all of these things and I have my routine. I don't want for my daughter to have to disrupt her life and her routine. This is a time of life she should be enjoying. And that can extend to any friend or family member who offers. You feel like you just don't want to disrupt for them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, frankly, it's a disruption for you. If it's brand new,
right?
You know, if it's the first time somebody's helping you with something, there are some teaching moments that have to happen. And there is some organizing that has to be done, which is stressful for you because you have to rethink how you're doing things that day. And so it can be stressful. But what I found was if I would take the time to add that little bit of stress to my day to help somebody else learn what I need, then it became much easier to let go, number one, and to feel confident that somebody else would do what was necessary and do it the right way. And it also started to give me a little bit of freedom and room to breathe, which I really needed. It was, you know, you have to take that time to breathe. You have to check in with yourself. And, you know, I've been a caregiver multiple times. The first time around, I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't do those things for myself. The second time around, did more for myself, but still didn't ask for help the way I should. Third time was a charm, asked for help. And that help was really such a change factor for us.
Right.
You know, my husband and I, we run our own business. And so we were working from home and we were caregiving at home. Having help allowed us to maintain a normal life while we were caregiving, if that's possible. You know, whatever the word normal means.
Yeah, exactly.
It was normal for a caregiving situation, but it allowed for us to spend our time loving on him, my father-in-law, and spending really great time with him and enjoying moments that we couldn't enjoy before because we were trying to get all the work done.
Right.
You know, somebody else can clean the toilets and somebody else can vacuum the floor.
Right.
And we spent more moments with him playing Yahtzee and, you know, playing beanbag toss and telling stories and looking at old photographs and, you know, those are the things that you want. Those are the memories you want to take with you. Those are the things that you want them to be consumed with at the end of their life.
Right.
if they see you running around feeling burdened and stressed mm-hmm. and not caring for yourself, that is a huge burden on the care recipient. They know it.
Right.
They're looking at you and they know that. They might be grumpy. They might be difficult to deal with, especially if they've got any kind of dementia. Mm-hmm. But in their lucid moments, they know it.
Yes.
And so you, by you taking care of yourself and you taking the time to really enjoy them, it's doing a lot for you and doing as much for them as well.
Exactly. Another thing I mm-hmm. just thought of was a lot of times the ones that are the caregivers are still parents themselves of young ones.
Yes.
And so
sandwich generation.
Yes. So the importance of care, self-care is even more so because your load is heavy with small children who at, you know, some ages have no idea what it is you're doing, nor do they care, quite frankly, that you've also got to take care of somebody who's older. And so the value and importance of enlisting others, if you can, for aid is really, really, really important. I like how you mentioned respite. I don't know if everybody knows what that word means, only because I didn't know what it meant until I, as far as, you know, elder care, until I became a caregiver. So could you explain that just a little bit?
Sure. So respite is when you make arrangements for a break. So it can be achieved in a number of ways. You might have someone come in to give you respite mm-hmm. and they come to your home. They provide care while you do whatever it is you want to do. Sometimes you might go away from the home. Sometimes you might just go take a long shower mm-hmm. or go into your room and read or whatever it is that you'd like to do. You can also achieve respite by taking advantage of adult daycare programs. Or some assisted living communities offer a daycare situation. Some programs, sometimes the Area Agencies on Aging will offer this, where they will send a caregiver to your home for a few hours. Typically, it's just an opportunity for you to have a break from what you're doing in order to do normal life things. There are also times when you'll find a more long-term respite. I know when my mother-in-law was sick, she had cancer, and she went and stayed at the hospice house for a week so that my father-in-law could have respite. Mm. It's rest for the caregiver. Mm. He needed to rejuvenate himself. He needed to sleep. He needed to exercise, and he needed to eat, and he needed just a mental break. And so it can, you know, depending on where you are and what your scenario is, there are lots of ways to achieve respite. Most of the time, it's a friend or a family member. Maybe it's a sister coming and staying at your house for a week so you can take a short family vacation mm-hmm. and go away. But respite is really important. And the best way for me to define it is rest for the person who's giving care.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that. So
yeah,
I
of course.
Actually am part of a elderly care group on Facebook. It's a private group. And they had a few questions. Honestly, you answered several of the questions, so I don't even need to ask them that I was going to ask you. But there was one or two that I did want to talk about a little bit, just because I think it's so common that we have elderly loved ones we care for that have Alzheimer's. And mm-hmm. Alzheimer's is at every stage is difficult. Sometimes it's swift and it is utterly confusing and terrifying, quite honestly. Now, are there grants available for people that are caring for people with Alzheimer's?
That, again, depends on where you live.
Okay.
The best way to find if there is anything in your area is to call the Area Agency on Aging.
Okay.
Honestly, the financial piece of this is very difficult to come by right now. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see some changes in that, because here's the truth of the matter. There are somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 million baby boomers who are beginning to age into the 65 plus demographic. Mm-hmm. Right now, even at the beginning of that, we're just hitting the first stages of that. our elder care system in the United States is struggling to keep up. What does that mean? That means that there are not enough caregivers who are trained who can offer in-home care. There are not enough beds in nursing homes and assisted living communities. And so what that means is we're going to have to get really creative about how we take care of the aging population. My estimation, my prediction is that we will see states beginning to take a much closer look at caring for loved ones in the home and providing incentives for families to do that. I know that there are some things being talked about. I don't know any details, but I really think that that is, you're going to see a lot of that, especially coming off of this COVID crisis, where most of the assisted living and nursing homes were not taking new patients or new residents because they couldn't risk infecting the rest of the population. So things have been shut down and families have been forced to make their way on their own. I think you're going to see a lot of changes in the way things are done and in the way things are funded to allow families to do that. It will be less expensive for the government, for sure. I think you'll find it will equip the caregivers to do a better job and to have access to additional resources, both educational and financial, to help them do the job that needs to be done. But in the current moment, there is not a whole lot. You might, if you are a veteran or your loved one is a veteran, then I would definitely check with your local veterans office to find out if they qualify for aid in attendance or any other assistance. There typically is quite a bit of assistance for them. If you have Medicaid, you probably will qualify for some funds to care for your loved one at home. It's not going to be the type of funds that would be a salary, but absolutely anything helps. So that's probably where to begin with that. Now, beyond that, definitely plug into the Alzheimer's Association. They have incredible resources and incredible support for caregivers. They have right now so many online programs to take care to help you to take care of your loved one. They have support groups that are virtual. They used to meet in person, most of them, and I don't think that any are in person right now because of the current situation, but they're continuing those support groups and have never stopped. Those are virtual. And so I will send you a link for it. But if you go to the Alzheimer's Association website, you'll find, you can find your own location and plug into your local office and they can tell you everything that's available. But they offer so many different things, caregiver college, education, just all kinds of resources to help you to do your job and to understand what your loved one is going through. Because with Alzheimer's particularly, understanding the process will help you to be a better caregiver. There are things that happen that you can't possibly understand. I was just talking to a friend this morning whose mom is progressing. And she said, oh, my mom said something so rude to my dad. I don't know what to do. Should I talk to her about it? And I said, no, you shouldn't, because that's not her. She has no control over that. Your best bet is to spend your time encouraging and uplifting and edifying dad, helping him to understand that this isn't really mom. This is part of the disease and she can't help that. Your efforts are better spent with dad because she won't remember it. The only thing you'll achieve by talking to her about it is to make her feel bad all over again.
And probably and aggravated. So,
Yeah,
it's Alzheimer's is rough. And so I, the gentleman I care for is, you know, early, he's early on in it. But there are things that he has said and done. And I have to remind really everyone, you have to keep in mind, compare it essentially to a portion of his brain is no longer functioning. And so the portion of the brain that has a filter, because that's a big one, the filter is out the window. And so crazy things are said, confusing things, you know, things, hallucinations and things that aren't really there. And they sound just so out of the realm of reality. And having a conversation with him about it is probably going to do no benefit, but possibly aggravate yourself. But so I love how you said right. that you redirected her to take care of her father, because yes, that's who's going to need some more care right then. Because regardless of whether or not you recognize that it wasn't said with intent, it doesn't change the hurt. And so taking Absolutely. Care of her father is an excellent suggestion.
And you know, another resource as it relates to Alzheimer's, there is a woman named Tipa yes. Snow.
I was just going to say
oh,
Tipa.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
She's amazing. And she's got a bazillion videos mm-hmm. online. And so anyone who is caring for someone with Alzheimer's, you need to become familiar with her and everything she's doing. Her content is current and plentiful. Mm-hmm. And if you follow her on LinkedIn, I don't know.
I think she's on YouTube also.
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure about Facebook and Instagram, but I've definitely seen a lot of things coming out via LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And she's constant videos
yes.
and talking about dealing with the dementia and Alzheimer's in the COVID scenario.
Oh, wow,
and
great.
So it's current. She's always offering new information, and her old information is just as good. But what I love about what she does is that she teaches you as a caregiver not only to understand what your loved one is going through, and she's got it all broken down into stages so mm-hmm. you kind of know what to expect, but she gives you coping strategies. So let's say mom says, I don't want to take a shower. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that.
Very
and
common.
You can't make me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So instead of arguing with her, say, you know what, mom, let's just dance. Turn on some music and start dancing with mom and dance your way to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And by the time you're there, she'll have forgotten she didn't want to take a shower and your life is much easier. Mm-hmm. And so she gives you so many coping strategies. They don't want to eat the bowl of soup in front of them. They say they're not hungry. You push it to the side for a moment, have another interaction, you know, do something to steer the conversation in another direction, talk about a favorite song, and then push that bowl back in front of them. And there you go. They're ready to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I love how very specific she gets down to very specific things that you have to deal with as when you're caring for someone who has Alzheimer's. It's not general. She gets very specifically detailed. And Tipa, I believe it's T-E-E-P-A. S-N-O-W. Yeah, just in case anybody. Yeah, so Tipa Snow. If you just type that into your browser, you'll find her. She is fabulous.
She's great.
Yeah.
I've been to some live teachings of hers here locally where I live, and she's hilarious and so easy to learn from because it's relatable, and she makes you in the workshop sections, you know, we actually role play and someone plays the person with dementia, and she will teach in real time how to get beyond some of those scenarios. And I know a lot of her videos are from those events. Mm-hmm. So definitely something to check out.
That's great. Yeah, she's great. I'm glad you brought her up. Okay. So one other question, and I'm not sure if you'll have the answer for this, but one other question that I think is important is discussing, actually, you probably have the answer for this, discussing the differences between POA, guardian, living will, trust.
Oh boy, that is an entire show all
so
in
maybe
itself.
Like, quick.
Because
which one do we get first?
Okay, the first, this is all what your elder law attorney is going to line up for you. Mm-hmm. So your power of attorney is when you become incapacitated in any way. So whether it's because of dementia or because of an illness, you can even decide at some point, I'm stressed about doing my day-to-day stuff and I want to give power of attorney to my person. Mm-hmm. This is a serious discussion because power of attorney gives that person a lot of control.
Right.
If you choose the wrong person, that could be a little bit scary, but most families, it works out fairly well. Mm-hmm. This is something that has been discussed long before because, you know, we talked a while back at the beginning of the discussion about having that family conversation. Mm-hmm. During that time frame, you're going to determine the roles that each person is going to play. So whoever that power of attorney person is, that's their trusted person that they want to take care of financial things. That's what that's going to take care of. Okay. Now, your medical surrogacy, this is a different thing. You can have a different person taking care of your finances and your medical decisions. Okay. It doesn't have to be the same person. Okay. So that's something that you want in place so that if I become incapacitated medically, who's going to make those decisions?
Okay.
You talked about a living will.
Mm-hmm.
That is a super important form. Everyone 18 and older should have one to let people know what you want. If you have a medical incident, do you want machines or do you not?
Okay.
Do you want to be resuscitated or do you not?
Mm-hmm.
That's what that form will accomplish. What was the other form you said?
Trust.
Oh, a trust. Now here, this is a really important conversation. It's another long one, but we're going to just glaze over it really quick. If you are a person who has assets of any kind, make your appointment now to talk to your elder law attorney. Here's why I say that. Let's say that you have, I don't know, $150,000, $200,000 in assets.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, you know, if I pinch my pennies and if I really take care of things, I'll be okay. I'll get through the later years of my life. And then you get a diagnosis for something crazy that's going to be very costly.
Mm-hmm.
You run through your couple $100,000 and you have nothing,
mm.
right? That's difficult.
Right.
And that leaves the family in a very difficult situation. If you pre-plan, go and talk to your elder law attorney. They can structure your assets in a trust so that you can also, you can use the money from that trust to help to provide your care, but you can also take advantage of Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm not going to go into detail on that because I am not an elder law attorney. Mm-hmm. This is something you definitely will have to take up with somebody who's trained and who knows all the ins and outs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to plan ahead for that because many people, I've heard this a million times. Well, in order to qualify for Medicaid, I need to spend down.
Mm-hmm.
I need to give all of my money away.
Right.
And they gift all of their money away to the family, not realizing that there's a 5-year look back.
Right.
And so when they go and apply to Medicaid, Medicaid says, sorry, you tried to play the system.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to penalize you financially. And here's how much money that you're going to have to pay before Medicaid kicks in.
Mm.
And then we have a horrible scenario.
Right.
Right. So you have to plan ahead. It is not a simple go online, fill out a form type of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to pay an attorney.
Right.
It is worth the little bit of money you're going to pay that attorney to have a secure future.
Perfect.
They can make sure that you will be cared for throughout your life. If you have an opportunity to purchase long-term care insurance, please do.
Mm.
This is something that could really, really help in so many ways and provide you a higher quality of care than you might have had otherwise.
Excellent.
Especially knowing that as we go forward and we have places that are just, there's no capacity to care for the number of people that need to be cared for in the coming years.
Right.
Knowing that you want to prepare as well as you can now so that you have choices, because most of the nursing homes have a certain number of beds dedicated to Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
and then private pay. On the private pay side, never a problem to find a bed. Medicaid side, sometimes you might not get your first choice of facility that you want to use. You might have to go wherever the bed is available.
Mm. Okay.
So all things to think about.
So much.
Right?
So
wait,
much
I told
to
you
about.
We could talk for hours.
No, and I know. I've got so many. And I'm looking at the time and I'm like, oh, we've got to close it out. But so recap. I am hearing we make an appointment with an attorney when you are 18 years old, if you haven't done so already. Sit down with the family and have these conversations ASAP. Don't forget to take care of yourselves. And once again, get an elder attorney. That sounds like
yes.
a good recap of the general idea.
Yes, it is. And you know, we didn't get, there's this really cool report about caregivers and caregiving that AARP recently put out. I'm going to give you a link to that mm-hmm. so you can include it in your show notes. Excellent. Because it's so interesting. It gives so many statistics about caregivers and caregiving. Mm-hmm. And I think that anyone who's in that scenario just might be interested to look through some of it. It's a really long report, but they do a real good job of providing diagrams in it. So just skim through and look at those diagrams and hit the highlights.
Yes.
But I'll send you that link.
You're right. I did want to touch down on that, but and we're running out of time. But yes, there is a lot of issues with caregivers dying before their loved ones, having substance abuse issues, anxiety, depression. Mm-hmm. It is a big issue. But I'll make sure we put that link in the show notes as well. Before we go, though, awesome. I would love for you to share with my listeners where they can get in contact with you, where they can hear your podcast, social media, all of that.
Sure. So you can find me at sageaging.us or polkeldercare.com. That's P-O-L-K, eldercare.com. And that, by the way, is a very comprehensive senior resource guide. It is specifically for Florida. However, the majority of the information in that guide is relevant everywhere. So give you a lot of good basic information about everything you can think of. So those are the two websites that you can find me at. My podcast is Sage Aging. We release a new episode every Tuesday morning. You can find that on my website, or you can even just go to your favorite podcast app and download it there. We talk about all kinds of things related to seniors. If you ever have an idea, a topic you want to hear about, a guest you'd like me to pursue, definitely send me those ideas. We're happy to cover it. You can reach me via email at info@sageaging.us. If you have questions that you want to dig further on from today, feel free to email me there. I don't always have every answer, but I certainly know where to find them and am happy to assist wherever I can. Social media, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Liz, for coming on today. I loved this topic. And like I said, even though it wasn't a topic I normally would do, it's so important for us to recognize these things. And like I said, because so many women, too, are the ones that end up being the ones taking care of all of these things.
Yeah, and about 61%.
Yeah, see, so I'm empowering women as we go here. Even though you guys don't know you need it yet, you do.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I hope that it was helpful for people today. And again, always available. Let me know if there's anything I can do.
Great. Thank you so much. And I will be including all of her contact information in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening in to today's episode of That's Not Proper. If you are interested in connecting with Liz and Sage Aging, please check the show notes. I will be including all of that information in there. And remember, come back next week for next week's episode of That's Not Proper.